We spoke of the perfection of instruments, the reason, mind, the heart, the life force, and the physical body. With the perfectioning of this instrumentation, we arrive at something ready to work as an instrument. But what is it that is to work? That is the question. Indeed, what is to work in the perfected instrument is the divine power, the Shakti. All preparation has to be done, things have to be readied in order that the instruments may support the action of the divine force. And as we have seen, a minimum of purity, harmony between the various parts of the being and an upraising of their capacities is essential. Once the instrument is ready, the next question is the divine Shakti also being accepted. On what basis does the divine Shakti work? It works in relation to the Lord, the Ishvara, whether in the universe or in the individual. It is the Ishvara, the Purusha, for whom his power, his Shakti works. And the instruments that are readied are used for this purpose, to work out the will of the Purusha. In individual, we call it Purusha. And the cosmic scale, we call him the Ishvara. And this Purusha expresses his will in each individual as the soul force, the force of the soul. We speak always of force of nature, but there is also such a thing as force of soul. And whatever may be the truth, in the case of average persons, in persons who make a mark or who do something above average, it is the soul force that makes its impact through nature. Otherwise, it is only nature that expresses itself. And those who express or bring out the soul force characteristically in an impressive measure, in a lasting impression, they are what are called vibhutis. Wherever a quality or a divine power is expressed in a preeminent manner, that is the vibhuti, a special concentration of the divine power, is to be distinguished from the avatar, which is an incarnation. An incarnation is in a different category. It is the divine who takes birth in the soul. Here, it is a quality or a power of the divine with which the evolving soul is endowed, may be evolving or not evolving, the soul is endowed for some particular purpose in creation. By and large, this power that expresses itself has a certain impersonal quality about it. It sweeps not only the instrument, but the whole field before it. There is a surge which is certainly not personal. So it is something more than the normal soul force which we speak of in the case of ordinary individuals. The Purusha, the divine being, is indeed many-qualitied, infinite in quality, in a certain sense without quality, but in manifestation with an infinite number of qualities. But he has to work through nature, which, as we have seen, has three modes: sattva, rajas and tamas, enlightenment and peace, dynamism and power, inertia and rest. As persons evolve, though the mold is accepted of sattva, rajas, tamas, it is the special power of the soul that is expressed in life. And this special power of the soul, says Sri Aurobindo, is fourfold. In each individual, the power of the soul, which has to express itself, organize itself, build itself in the course of evolution, is fourfold. Put briefly, there is the power of knowledge, of intelligence. There is the power of effectuation, strength. There is the power of harmony, mutuality, production, adaptation. There is the power of work, service, labor. This, in brief, is the description of the fourfold power. And in each man, Sri Aurobindo points out, that all these four powers are instinct, whether they are developed or not, whether man is overtly conscious or not. All the four powers are there embedded in man. Some may be conscious of a particular power, and that may take the lead and lead the other. That may be more prominent, and according to the prominence taken by a particular power, we call that person an intellectual or a dynamic man or a man of the world who can get on, or a person who is essentially meant for service, and so on. But as we will be seeing, all these are there, and it is one of the aims of evolution, spiritual evolution, to see that the all four develop equally, get coordinated by the will of the soul, and present a fourfold personality in the fullness of time. The first power, the soul force, is the power, the hunger, the aspiration that seeks for knowledge. In each person, there is an element that wants to know the level of the knowledge sought, the nature of the object sought to be known may differ from person to person. But that longing, that seeking to know, to acquire the knowledge of what one doesn't know, that is there in each person. And this seeking for knowledge is centered in the intelligence in the mind. The mind is alert and probes things, in order to know things. There are grades, there are stages through which this power of knowledge has to develop. In the beginning, when it may be just curiosity, later it may be out of necessity of life that some persons want to know things, understand things. Some may become sheer dry intellectuals who are satisfied with knowing mentally what is what. They may be philosophers, armchair philosophers. There are some who go more to the root of things and they acquire wisdom. They are called the sages, not the philosophers, but the sages. If, however, this development proceeds without reference to the other powers, then the knowledge becomes ineffective. It becomes a one-sided development, overloaded in the direction of the mind, and what a person knows remains just a theory. Unless what one knows is sought to be practiced, put into operation, rendered in terms of life, that knowledge remains, as Sri Aurobindo describes elsewhere, something on the top shelf which we rarely touch. It is to be brought down, made use of, and only then can knowledge be fruitful. But for whatever we want to do, whatever we want to achieve, knowledge is the first essential. Knowledge is the first requirement. After acquiring knowledge, there is the question of effectuating that knowledge. We want to practice, there are obstructions, we have to break down the obstructions, impose our knowledge will on our environment, on our recalcitrant elements, members of our own being. And this, to guard the knowledge that you have got, to express the knowledge with force, to work out the knowledge in life, there is required a certain dynamism, a certain strength, certain power of effectuation. And that is the second element, the second limb of the soul force. The third, yes, if, however, there is an undue stress only on power, only on strength, not without sufficient background of knowledge, then one may turn into something titanic, something asuric. One may go on trying to effectuate and assert one's own will, unenlightened will. That is why a proper background of knowledge is necessary for the right exercise of will. Exercise of power. Power without knowledge is irresponsible. So both have to be complementary. Knowledge without power is important, and power without knowledge is irresponsible. This is the first two limbs. The third limb is the arranging intelligence. There are those who go on gulping bits of knowledge without coordinating them, without arranging them, referring to the life situations, to the need in life. So this facility, capacity to arrange what one knows, to adapt what one knows to differing situations, not having one rule for all occasions, but what is called a practical intelligence, making best of the situations with the available power, with the available knowledge, that is indispensable. and it is with knowledge, in whatever field, with capacity to effectuate, one produces, whether in individual life or in the collective life. Production is essential in life. Whatever the kind of output we have to produce, and in society, production is always followed by exchange, by interchange, having harmony with people, not only harmony among the different members of our own being, but harmony with others with whom we are associated or thrown together. These capacities of arranging things, producing, exchange, needs a certain type of skill, and only those who are endowed with this skill, entrepreneurial skill as it is called, they succeed in life. Of course, here also, there are those, or there are cases where they have neither the full knowledge nor the requisite capacities, but they have this practical intelligence. They maneuver, they manipulate, and manage to get the best results. But that is not an ideal situation. And fourth, one may know, one may have the power, one may have the skill to operate, but unless one exerts oneself, one pours one's energies, serves, labors, nothing can be achieved. This is the fourth power. In ancient Indian system, these four were symbolized by the type, four types, which constituted originally the basis of what later came to be called the four castes, the four communities. The knowledge type symbolized by the Brahmana, Brahmin. Who is a Brahmin? Not one who is born in a Brahmana family, but one who seeks to know Brahman, one who tries to go near Brahman, who communicates the knowledge of Brahman. He is a Brahman, not one who is just born in that community. That was the original connotation. The power type, the strength type, is the Kshatriya, the hero warrior who was called upon to guard the intellectual and the spiritual and the knowledge heritage of the society. Then the producer type, adapting type, the type, the harmonist, he was symbolized by the Vaishya, that is, the commercial classes, the producers of commonwealth, exchanging, coordinating between production, distribution, and the persons who are going to use. This function was largely attended to by the Vaishyas. And then came the Shudra, the labor, the person whose dharma it was to serve. Sri Aurobindo points out that this emphasis that certain persons are best fitted to work, to serve, to labor, has also found an echo in the modern thought of dignity of labor. Of course, there may be others who may point out that the laboring classes do not really work, because there is a dignity in it. They work out of necessity, economic compulsions. But still, whatever the compulsions of the society, whatever the compulsions of life, service has as great a role to play. And Sri Aurobindo points out, in a sense, a more important role than the others, because it is the foundation. In the Vedic symbology, the Shudra, the service class, is said to emanate from the foot of Brahman. The whole cosmos is conceived as his being. The Brahmin from his head, the hero warrior, the Kshatriya from his arms, the Vaishya, the producer from the thighs, and the Shudra, the serviceman from the feet, and the earth is his footing. So the foot, the footing, the foundation of the whole cosmos is there in service. And in the higher ranks of spiritual fulfillment, Sri Aurobindo underlines that service, self-giving, pouring of one's energies, assumes a different complexion when it is separated from self, from having to work and earn for oneself. When the perspective is changed, when the service is meant for God in himself and for God in the universe, God in men, society, in the human society, in the society, the complexion changes. So here also, it is as important as the other three. And in each case, the emphasis is on coordination. We have seen how without power, knowledge remains important. Power without knowledge becomes irresponsible. And the man of production, of exchange, who adapts things, who promotes harmony, what is he going to do, on what basis, unless he has knowledge, unless he has the effectuating capacity to translate his abilities into action? Similarly, even the labor, even the service person, service man, if he is content to remain only serving and laboring, he will become a machine. He also, in his own way, at his own level, has got that element of knowledge, the knowledge of his craft, the knowledge how to do things best, speedily, perfectly. He has the power to effectuate what he knows. Not all can do that service. He has that capacity, he has that strength, that special type of strength intended for the special profession. Even if it is a smith, there is a power, there is a strength that expresses itself precisely in the profession of a smith. And then he needs to know how to coordinate the various parts of his work, how to reach it to others. Thus in each person, all these four elements have to be coordinated. And as man evolves, he recognizes the necessity. In the olden days, each society was given this fourfold base. The names may differ. Even in the West, they had this fourfold order. I may be mistaken in names. They had the first, I believe, the church, symbolizing spiritual or religious heritage. Then the nobles, to guard, to support and give strength. And then the mercantile classes. And fourth were the laity. This, wherever human society has been formed, this fourfold classification has had to be there, because it is the cosmic intention that things have been travestied in the later development of caste system in India is another matter, but the basis is there. If we eliminate this basis, things become confused, and each individual, as he evolves, he himself recognizes the necessity of work, the necessity of adapting himself to situations, harmonizing with other people, then acquiring the capacity and the power to effectuate what he knows, and primarily the necessity of knowing the meaning of life, necessity of knowledge before he can live. And a recognition of this interconnection of the four different aspects of the soul power is a must for integral, total perfection. In the Vedas, as early as the Vedas, there are hymns which point out, there is a particular hymn which speaks of Ribhus, the artisans of immortality, where they speak how there is a special class of gods, divine powers, who out of one bowl with which man is endowed at birth, as he progresses, as he works, as he surrenders himself to the divine, they come into operation, they set to work, and out of one bowl they prepare four bowls. And with the perfection, with the completion of these four bowls, is the attainment of immortality. This fourfold perfection is an ancient idea. It has not lost its relevance even today, because even in the present teaching with which we are concerned, there is this recognition that corresponding to this fourfold aspiration of man, fourfold perfection that man is called upon to build in himself, the divine also is described as manifesting in four major powers. The divine Shakti, the divine Mother, in whose hands is given this task of perfecting humanity. She has emanated four powers. The first power, Mahasaraswati, is concerned with knowledge, largeness of vision, organization of light. She is to perfect, take charge and perfect the limb of knowledge. Mahakali, the divine mother of strength, power, she it is who has to take up the human energies, human power, and perfect it in terms of her own strength. Then comes Mahalakshmi, the goddess of beauty and harmony, who has to teach man to coordinate things, to harmonize things, to add beauty, the value of beauty, to this world of confusion and ugliness in ignorance. And last comes Mahasaraswati, the goddess of precision, of work, of perfection, who is not satisfied with anything less than perfection. And it is she who has to perfect the side of service, the side of work, the side of labor. So there is no real deprecation when they speak of the fourth class, the class of workers. Because even in the divine manifestation, the Divine Mother takes an appropriate form, the form of Mahasaraswati, to raise this human aspiration for perfection in work, for perfection in a totality of perspective in service, to the divine level. Thus we come to this point, that seconding the human aspiration, the human will, the human striving, there is the divine Shakti that operates, that uplifts, and that is to give the crown of perfection. Now what is the divine Shakti? How does it manifest? How does it work? How does it work in individual terms? That should be the theme for our next session. The soul force is an individual expression of the divine Shakti that wants to manifest through each soul. In each person there is a different stress. So in one soul the divine Shakti may want to express primarily its power aspect, in another its knowledge aspect, but all the other parts, the other elements are behind the one which takes the lead. And the soul force, you may say, is only a projection of the divine Shakti, and that soul force works through nature, and that nature has three gunas, three modes. So a fourfold power working through a threefold nature. If you see examples of people who have been great successes in life, even though they may not be spiritual or they may not claim to be spiritual, you would see they were not one-sided. They had got all these powers, though it may be in varying degrees, but all were developed. Take Napoleon, take Nehru, take Shivaji. They were all, see, one thing may be in the front, but all the three were developed. Napoleon, for instance, is essentially a hero type, a Kshatriya type. But his knowledge was amazing, of various, not only of military science, but even of statecraft, men, psychology, is amazing. And then he had the power to coordinate a dozen generals around him, plotting always. But he coordinated, he held in leash.
and then he worked. He is said to have slept only on horseback. That capacity to work, if he was only a general, if he was only a military strategist, he could not have been what he was. So it is a sign of evolution. In such cases, he is not an evolving soul, but anything to be effectuated, all the four elements have to be there.
Then, as the mother chose a special place of birth, country for a purpose, and the time the caste were in effect in India, did she have a little to the special caste for a special work, or could it have only male?
Sri Aurobindo chose India, mother also chose France, but not any special caste. She didn't choose to be a Catholic, Sri Aurobindo didn't choose to be a, what is it called, Vaishya, Kayastha, you see. The country was chosen. The country was chosen because the country has a soul, the nation has a soul. And because it is the Indian nation, Indian soul of India, that had to play a part, a leading part, in the spiritual regeneration and transformation of the ideal, Sri Aurobindo chose India. And because mother wanted that perfection in work, organizing capacities and abilities, which were developed at their peak in Europe, and at that time France was the leader. Germany had not come up so much at that time. Germany was considered to be a boor when France was at the zenith of civilization, European civilization. So at that time she chose to take birth in France, and with very good results, I should say. We have seen nobody could have achieved. Even 10 men, first-class men, could not have achieved what she has done here. The way she held even the minutest detail in her grasp, without losing her vision, without losing her overall perspective, that was something. And she showed that it was, man could attain it. It was not that it was something divine that came and man can't achieve. No. She expected, and she taught people around her to practice those things and showed how it was practicable.
Let's say people are the three lower
categories. In their own way, it need not be knowledge of the Shastras, you know, but knowledge of what you are doing, knowledge of it. You go to any man, he has his own philosophy. You go to any man in India, I don't know about foreign countries, go to any man, a coolie or a riot in a peasant in a village, he has his own philosophy and a sound philosophy. He has that element of knowledge, not only of his profession, of his crop, of when he is going to sell and all that, but he has a philosophy of life. He is not a crude man that way. So, take man at any level, a civilized man naturally, then you will find all the four elements. The curse of modern civilization is specialization. We have brought things to such a pass that one is just this much and nothing else. He is wonderful in that area. Specialization, this is the thing that mother had abhorred. She said, no, there has to be a total development. Apart from social total development, specialization can be there. But nobody should try to be a specialist. So even in sports, she never approved of people trying to get high points in one. concentrating in one aspect or one part of the sports and getting a gold medal or a silver medal. She rather preferred that you have knowledge of all the games, all the things, and have a certain standard. Because for her, sport was a part of perfection of life, not of getting distinction. He said, never play to win, but play to play well. This tendency for specialization is to narrow our interests. And one of the things which will be swept away as this old civilization goes is this narrowing of one's interests, narrowing of the range of the soul. Shudra doesn't have a pejorative this thing, you see. Yes, please.
Could you talk a bit about the different kinds of avatars? I've heard it said there are different kinds, such as those who have a descent and deliberate one time view, or others who have evolved all the way and have suddenly come upon.
Yes. An avatar is a special descent of the divine, and this person who is the divine descended on earth, he is always conscious from the beginning. Ever since consciousness begins, he or she is conscious that it is divine, that he or he is divine. There are what are called partial avatars, that is, only a part of the divine being takes birth to help humanity in certain situations. There are occasions like the present where great transitions have to be made, and they are the full avatars. The whole being of the divine descends. Of course, when we speak, if the whole being has come, what is left there, we can't ask. Because in the Upanishads it has been said, you take out the full from the full and all remains. So it is not something, a mathematical or an arithmetical totality that we speak. But the whole divine comes, and the person is not just a partial manifestation, he is a full and plenary manifestation. Some come to manifest only a particular aspect of God. They are not the full incarnations. They establish that particular value and they go. There are those who want to establish that amount of divine consciousness which the earth is ready for or which can sustain. It contains all the values. They are the full avatars.
Is it so, however, that there is always an evolving soul in that individual body in which the descent takes place that accompanies that?
Where we speak of partial incarnations, a evolving soul may be chosen. And that manifestation can take place through that individual. But where it is a case of full manifestation, it is not an evolving soul.
Sri Aurobindo said he and the mother had been with the earth since.
That is different. They did not. The thing is, in this sense, this is a very important question. It is in this sense. There is a particular aspect or center in the divine infinitude, infinite being. There is a particular center. That center, you can say, or that being, if we can use that word there, has been presiding over a particular line of evolution. So that divine being which presided during the birth of so-and-so, during the birth of so-and-so, that is the same. So it is not that Sri Aurobindo as such, as we knew, he had taken birth earlier. No. That divine part which presided over the human figure of Sri Aurobindo also presided over the human figure of Rama or Krishna. It is not. Similarly with mother. That thing remains there. That presides, that guides. And that memory is there because that being is presiding. He has explained this particular question. How they could say, for instance, when they speak of Leonardo, he did not take birth as Leonardo, but he presided over the manifestation through Leonardo. In a loose way we talk, he was also Leonardo, he was also Julius Caesar, mother was Cleopatra, all these things. They were special manifestations in their particular fields, and mother and Sri Aurobindo presided over them.
Is that one that does the presiding over them?
Not all, this particular line of spiritual evolution.
All right.
The whole of divine in being is not devoted or exhausted by our spiritual evolution.
Yes, I didn't mean that. But he would be both the individual and the personal collective as that present. So that means that he is both soul and beyond.
Yes.